What do you love about music?
To begin with, everything.
Putting on a great show is the most important thing you can do. One great rock show can change the world.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Kot. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Today on the world's only rock and roll talk show, we've got a live performance and an interview with Robin Hitchcock. And get this, he's backed up by Peter Buck and Scott McCoy of REM.
Plus, we'll hear your selections for the best albums of 2006 with a few reactions to our lists mixed in.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and it's time to welcome our latest affiliate, KTOO in Juneau, Alaska.
Good morning, Capitol Records.
Hello, Capitol Records. We're looking for Rob Cohen.
This is he.
Rob, you are the owner and proprietor of Capitol Records. Is that not correct?
This is true.
How did you end up in Juneau, Alaska, beautiful Juneau, Alaska, which is now broadcasting Sound Opinions, we're proud to say?
We are. We're happy in Juneau to have Sound Opinions on KTOO Radio. I ended up like most other folks who grew up in New Jersey or Chicago or Boston ended up here. Just came up to visit to watch a friend get married and then ended up never leaving.
Fell in love with the place, huh?
You bet. About 20 years ago.
But you know, usually, Rob, when we welcome a new affiliate, we play something from their area and kind of welcome them on board. We are at a disadvantage. There are not a lot of great Alaskan rock bands that we've been able to pay tribute
to. At least that we've heard of.
We may be
completely wrong about that.
That's why we figured we'd call you and find out a couple of things. You know, what's going on locally in the scene there, and also just what Alaska music lovers are buying.
I can help you with that.
Okay.
You know, there might not be a whole lot of Alaskan artists that have national fame, but we've got lots and lots of regional artists who've been making discs both here in Juneau and also from, you know, outlying areas in southeast Alaska and up in Anchorage, Fairbanks, etc. Most of the stuff we carry in terms of regional artists tends to be in the sort of country folk bluegrass category. That's what the iconoclasts up here tend to lean toward. And there's some really, you know, wonderful instrumentalists up here, great singer-songwriters. Some of them have their stuff on CD Baby, and a lot of them are just on the DIY train, producing it themselves and contacting local record stores one by one and just getting them there on the shelves.
What would you say the biggest seller in 2006 locally, Alaska music, was for Capitol Records?
Probably my main man, Mr. Buddy Tabor. House painter by day, troubadour by night, a gravelly voice, teller of tales. He's actually got about 5 or 6 albums out, and a Google search will bring him up with some sound clips. He's well worth checking out.
All right, we're going to hear some of that.
That's cool.
The Mr. Basketball Shoes owns a factory in China and Vietnam, where a 12-year-old girl works for nothing. He don't give a damn. 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when they break her malnourished body, they just throw her out in the street. And if workers try to unionize her, tell them they protest. Basketball Shoes calls the military, and they come out and make arrests.
Juneau is population 30,000.
So about 30,000.
It ain't like Chicago. Are you the only mom-and-pop record store in town?
We are the only mom-and-pop, yes.
Okay. So what were your big sellers in 2006?
We've sold a lot of Gnarls Barkley this year, a lot of Rockin' Tours, you know, the new Dylan, the Springsteen. You take a look at the top 40 lists, and, you know, we have our share of customers who rely on us for that stuff as well as the deep, dark nether regions of,
yes,
of recorded music out there.
What are you putting on first thing in the morning these days when you get into the store?
These days I'm putting on the new Loud Family Anton Barbeau CD. Just a nice piece of Southern California power pop. That one's called What If It Works. Otherwise, Magma happens to be a favorite around here of late.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask why. Otherwise,
the French progressive rock band from the 70s.
Yeah, my I've turned my guys onto Magma and Gentle Giant recently. They're
yes,
totally in love with Gentle Giants playing the fool.
Otherwise, I played Gentle Giant just a couple weeks ago on this show, and they're still getting crap from my peers here. Now this is why we're big in Alaska, guys. We're out in Alaska because they heard me play Gentle Giant.
They understand Jim DeRogatis and Juno.
Yes.
Thank God somebody does.
And what's the lowest temperature it gets in the winter?
Juneau's not really so bad. If it hits 5 degrees, then that's particularly cold. I'd say.
I'm just saying something. You know, if my choice is to like stay home in my PJs and download a piece of music, or you know, it's worth it for me to go to Capitol Records because Rob's going to take care of me. I mean, that's saying something when you get somebody to come out in 5 degree weather.
I would say, and we do. You know, they're bundled up from head to toe like the Michelin Man for sure. But
there you go. Yeah.
We are most proud of our customers who. Trudge in the worst of weather and
it's like, give me that Timberlake. I want that Fergie CD. Give it to me now.
And we're most proud to be on in Juneau, Alaska at KTOO, and glad to talk to you, Rob. Thanks for taking time out to speak to Sound Opinions.
Appreciate the call. Thanks
we're
a lot.
Coming by when we're in town.
I expect you to.
All right. Take care.
Take care, Rob.
Well, I'm on the way to time cold. I want to be keeping you warm. I got the right temperature for shelter you from the storm. Tactics to turn you on. And girl, I wanna be the papa, you can be the mom.
That's a little bit of Sean Paul's Temperature, which was the fourth best-selling digital track of 2006. Greg, we have not covered Sean Paul. We have to at some point. The reason we're playing that track is we want to take a look at the temperature of the music industry. The year-end numbers are in for 2006 from Nielsen SoundScan, which is the most credible organization measuring sales of albums online and in the record stores.
Now, Jim, if you believe the music industry, they've been in this terrible, terrible slump for the last 6-7 years, primarily blaming digital downloads.
The sky is falling.
Yes.
Yeah.
The internet is killing the music industry. Well, these numbers, SoundScan numbers, prove them wrong. For the second year in a row, overall music purchases were over 1 billion. More people in history buying more music than ever for the second year in a row. We're going to talk to a couple of music industry experts who look behind these numbers and tell us what the real story is. Let's talk to Chris Muratore, the Vice President of Retail Relations and Research Services at Nielsen SoundScan. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
You're one of our heroes, Chris, because one of the only objective ways to measure pop music is with the numbers, and you guys do a great job of keeping track of what people are actually buying.
We have been, since 1991, as you know, been tracking music sales from over 90% of all retail outlets across the United States.
We're looking at the key number here, the overall music sales. In 2005, it was 1.003 billion. In 2006, they're 1.198 billion. That's up 19.4%. That would seem to be pretty good news for any industry.
The big portion of that increase is due to the increase in individual purchases of digital track sales through your digital services like iTunes, Napster, Rhapsody, eMusic, all of those services.
SoundScan started out by every point of sale purchase of a piece of music was being measured at the cash register.
Correct.
Okay, and so now the same sort of coding in a digital music file enables you to measure what's being bought online.
Exactly. It's okay. The same sort of, instead of a UPC, we're now using an ISRC for an individual track that's being downloaded.
What's interesting here on this on these charts compiling the music purchases for 2006, total album sales are down. Again, for the seventh year in a row, I believe, nearly 5%. And yet overall music sales are way up, 19.4%.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of the overall market do digital sales now represent, and how has that increased over the years?
You're looking at digital purchases represent about 12% of all, more like 13% of all album purchases.
Mm. So that's going up. I mean, that's a significant increase over previous years.
Yes. Last year, it was only about 6%.
Wow. So is that the key difference here? Is that why the overall sales are up 19%,
yes,
even though album sales are down, the total mm-hmm. sales are up. What is it? Is it primarily that digital market that
it's
is accounting
mainly
for that difference?
That digital marketplace that is driving that increase of overall music purchases. Mm. Digital track sales were up 65% over 2005. You were at 582
wow.
million versus 353 million in 2005.
So the music industry has nothing to cry about, it sounds like to me, Chris.
I believe that the industry still is very healthy. I think we're seeing a little change in configuration. You know, we went from cassette to CD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you saw a change in how sales were happening, where consumers and how consumers were buying music. I think now we're starting to see a little that sort of change from CD to now digital.
The overall market is now 12% digital sales. Do you anticipate a point where we're going to get to where it's 50%, 75% of the market? And how soon do you think the industry will get there where the majority of its sales are coming from digital sales?
I think we're still a little ways away. I mean, you've got to look at physical CD purchases this year. There were still 588 million individual CDs purchased this year.
Wow.
So compared to 32 million digital album sales. And what's interesting on the report that we have, for digital music, you can see that the growth in digital album sales is even stronger among catalog product.
Hmm.
Well, that's
so
interesting.
The more we look at this, I'm wondering is if people now who are buying digital albums, are they now replacing their CD collections with the older digital albums that they had on their CDs or their cassettes? You know, just how CDs were thriving through the years, going, you know, through the 90s, people were replacing their cassettes with CDs.
Right.
Catalog albums, just looking at digital album sales last year, catalog albums were up 109%.
Mm.
Current albums were up 90%.
Chris Mirator is the Vice President of Retail Relations and Research Services at Nielsen Music, or as we like to think, the music industry numbers guy.
Numbers guy, right.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks,
Thank
Chris.
You.
We're now going to go to Jeff Mayfield, the Director of Charts and the Senior Analyst at Billboard Magazine. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're trying to make sense of how in 2006, overall music sales were up 19.4%, but the album sales are down almost 5%.
You have a new distribution channel that grows robustly from year to year, and that's digital distribution. And a bulk of what's being sold there are individual tracks. So that's not going to reflect in your album volume. A large part of what's happening in digital distribution, people aren't downloading whole albums as often as they are downloading entire songs. So that increase
yeah.
in transactions.
So they're selling smaller bites of music. I mean, the units sold are up. But dollar-wise, what is this meaning for the industry, Jeff? Have you got a handle on that?
If I had a handle on that, Billboard probably couldn't afford me.
Yeah.
You know, that's the puzzle that all the record companies are going to have to figure out, is that for decades they have made their bread and butter from album purchases, and you know, that's making dollars from dollars. And now with more and more variety available a la carte through digital distribution, they were likely going to have to figure out how to make dollars from pennies. You're talking about companies that were built, their brick and mortar was built on selling albums, and that's been true for decades.
Selling albums and then not paying Robert Johnson.
And we've had declines on album sales in five of the past 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the decline in album sales this year was only 5%, and I actually think that's pretty healthy compared to some of the declines that we've seen since 2000.
All right, so there's no way in hell we have to hold a telethon to raise money for Jimmy Iovine and Tommy Mottola.
Jimmy, no. you know, maybe mid-level management. Look, there's significant change. You know, there's been thousands and thousands of jobs that have been lost in this industry. And so, the people at the very top, they're probably okay. But, you know, yeah, they're still coming to grips. And so far, the first changes that you see are more structural. There's fewer major record companies now than there were a few years ago. But that's just part of what you do. You know, there's other ways that the economics of a record company need to be reexamined.
Cool. Jeff, thanks a lot for the insight. We appreciate it. Jeff Mayfield, the Director of Charts and Senior Analyst at Billboard Magazine. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, that's a little bit of REM's Sitting Still from their first album, Murmur. 25 years ago came out, Greg, which means they were eligible and, in fact, will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in a couple of months. Let me first tell you who's getting in this year. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, one of the first hip-hop groups to go into the hall. REM, the Ronettes, Patti Smith, and Van Halen.
Choices that would seem somewhat obvious. I think the real question marks surrounding this ballot are not so much who got in, but who's going to show up on stage when these guys do their infamous jam session at the end of the ceremony. So a lot because of people are asking about REM. Will Bill Berry actually show up and play drums with REM, which he hasn't done in, you know, a number of years, you know, except for the occasional one-off performance?
I mean, given that it's aired on VH1 after the inductions at the Waldorf Astoria, which I must repeat, as I do every year, is the least rock and roll place in the world, and you pay a couple of $100 and you dress up in a monkey suit tuxedo and you go, I mean, you know, how un-rock and roll is that? But it's become, who's going to get back together when we give you this prize?
Well, and the Van Halen reunion is the big chat here. You know, you have a band with at least three lead singers in its history,
right? Distinct eras.
And certainly two who the fans consistently battle over who's the better one, Sammy Hagar or David Lee Roth.
Well, it's not Van Halen without Gary Cherone.
Well, see, that's the thing. Is Gary Cherone going to get invited to the Hall of Fame?
Now Michael Anthony, the bass player, is out. And isn't Alex's kid, or is it Eddie? Eddie's kid is playing bass, or whatever. You know, who cares?
Yeah, who's going to show up on that stage? And I have an issue with Van Halen getting inducted as a band. I think Eddie Van Halen is certainly one of the most important guitarists in rock history. But as a band, I would say their music has been pretty negligible. Not nearly as influential as one of the bands that got left off the final list, which I voted for, Chic. A lot of people think, well, disco-era band, you know, and disco in itself has a hard time getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I think is a travesty. But I think Chic, being one of the most important bands of that era and incredibly influential, much more influential than Van Halen and many of the other bands on the list of people who got in. Between Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards, writing some of the most important songs of that era. And for the bass line alone on Good Times, I mean, how many times has that been sampled? We talked about this
no,
with James Brown.
It's true.
And you'll hear that bass line again and again. The Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight, the first major hit rap song. Another One Bites the Dust, major hit song from Queen. Okay, a few years later, here's a rock group appropriating a disco song bass line. And then you've got In Deep with Last Night a DJ Saved My Life. I mean, one of the great dance songs of the early mid-80s. All taking this classic bass line from Bernard Edwards.
Eligible for several years, not being inducted, the Stooges.
Yeah.
And that's inexplicable to me because the Stooges are actually, they were in Chicago a couple of weeks ago making a reunion album, Iggy Pop and the band that are considered one of the founders of punk rock, Kraftwerk. Has been eligible for years now. They have not been inducted. The German group that pretty much laid the foundation. Actually, if you put Kraftwerk and Chic together, you have all of the electronic dance music of the last 25 years.
Absolutely.
You know, this is really important stuff, and yet they don't get acknowledged.
We'll be back in a moment on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, and we'll have an interview and a live performance from Robin Hitchcock, Scott McCoy, and future Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Peter Buck.
Transeuropa Express. Transeuropa Express.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Greg Kot of the Chicago Tribune. My partner is Jim DeRogatis of the Chicago Sun-Times. And a few weeks back, we got a visit from Robin Hitchcock, who is on tour with two members of REM, Scott McCoy and Peter Buck.
If you don't know who Robin Hitchcock is, I kind of feel sorry for you. But he's one of our favorite artists, Greg, I think it's safe to say. Started out in the 70s with the Soft Boys in the punk era, doing something very different, psychedelic pop. In the 80s, the college rock era with the Egyptians. For years now, as a solo troubadour, our generations crossed between Bob Dylan and Syd Barrett.
I don't recognize these other two guys with you, Robin. McCoy and Buck or something like that. Are they pricey?
Basically, for me, as long as I get my own room, I'm okay. I'm way too old to share a room, so when they start talking about sharing rooms, that's when I pack the bag and go home.
Quit joking around here. It's Scott McCoy, Peter Buck of REM, and Robin Hitchcock. Welcome to Sound Opinions. Glad to have you. Thanks for having us.
It's true. Peter, you've never been here, and Scott's never been here, but Robin, I think this is the third or fourth time we've had you on Sound Opinions.
Yeah, although not at public radio.
Exactly. As you said when we just said hello a minute ago, Jim, I've known you for centuries.
Well, that's true, yeah.
We were trying to figure out, I've given up counting, Robin Hitchcock and the Venus 3, Olé Tarantula, is the what great, great album of your career? Can you even count?
No, I've no idea. I mean, I imagine it's in the 20s or 30s by now.
Yeah, it has to be. What a great, once again, you've surprised us, kind of taken a turn here and returned to a sound. I've seen a few interviews you've done where you've talked about it. Says, you know, a sound that was always associated with you early on with the Soft Boys and for a large part the Egyptians, the chiming guitars.
Well, and the harmonies.
And the harmony vocals.
I mean, because Peter, Bill, Scott and I have known each other in different combinations going back over 20 years. Peter, Bill and Scott are half of REM and three quarters of the Minus Five, and they're now also the Venus Three when they're attached to Robin Hitchcock. And Peter and I have been playing together since 85.
I wanted to get to that. How did you guys first meet? Do you remember?
You know what? I do remember. I did an interview and I just mentioned something about the Soft Boys, and Robin was kind of retired at the time. The guy goes, I know Robin. I'll mention that you said hello or something, and you called me up. And kind of, we had kind of similar tastes. You know, it was 1984 or whatever, and it was against the law to, like, say, the Band, you know, or the Birds. Because you either had to be New Romantic or punk rock or whatever.
Right.
So it was still just totally old-fashioned to, like, guitar rock music. And we kind of bonded over that.
Right.
Well, Peter, too, working in the record store, having a Soft Boys record and knowing what it was and appreciating it, that was kind of your first introduction to Robin was through that music, right?
And it was one of those funny coincidences. The B-52s were on this label in Atlanta for one single, and then Pylon and the Method Actors were on this label, DB. DB signed a deal with Armageddon Records, which had Robin in Europe, and they kind of did a minor league baseball player trade where the Method Actors got their record out in England, and Robin's record came out on basically a local record label that was run by a friend of mine. So it was kind of like all of a sudden these records were always around and I could hear them all the time, and it, you know.
Scott, where did you figure into this?
It was at Irving Plaza, actually. I saw Robin and the Egyptians, but very soon after, my band, the Young Fresh Fellows, opened for Robin and the Egyptians a couple shows in Berkeley and San Francisco, but I was already a huge fan. I was a Soft Boys fan from working in a record store, you know, the same. Yeah. Same thing, you know.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it works.
A bunch of music geeks in the same, you guys belong together. You're all like record collectors and fans first and foremost, it seems like.
Robin doesn't buy records, amazingly enough.
No, and nor do I listen to music, but I did. And I mean that would apply to, you know, Robbie Robertson or Bob Dylan or Keith Richard or somebody in their day, that they got involved by being involved in the world of records and the world of records that were slightly difficult to find in some way. I mean, didn't Jagger and Richard meet because one of them was on a train with some rare Jimmy Reed albums or something?
I think
singles
or something. Stuff,
you know, that's the last time Mick and Keith spoke to each other, probably.
Yeah.
And, you know,
next
time they met up, they had their people. Bingo. So we were all people who were magnetized by music, and so we became musicians in adult life.
Robin and Peter have got guitars. Scott is poised at the piano. You guys want to play some music?
Yeah. All right. Let's try Have you got a vocal mic?
Yes.
Are you up to doing Ole Tarantula with the piano?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
let's try this. Okay.
Out in the trees, old tarantulas got me humming. Out in the desert, the cacti are home. Tarantulas cluster in their underground dome. Olé, tarantula. Furry black legs and a spicy goatee. If you see Gino, won't you kiss him for me? Olé, tarantula. Through the dark window, she squeezes her eggs. Out they come tumbling on their spindly legs. Olé, tarantula. I feel like a three-legged chinchilla standing on a table so wide I can't see over the side. Look at his fingers caressing the keys. If he don't please you, you just can't be pleased. Olé, tarantula. Pumping it in through a spiky black fist. If she don't kiss you, you'll never be kissed. Olé, tarantula. I knew a woman in San Francisco, or maybe it was down in San Jose, I don't recall.
Title track of Robin Hitchcock's new album, Olé Tarantula. Robin Hitchcock's new album with the Venus Three, of which we have two-thirds here. Scott McCoy and Peter Buck. Why Olé Tarantula, Robin? I mean, I don't, you know.
You mean why the song? Why is the album named after it?
Why does... What is the concept there? I mean, you always have a good story about what you're writing about. What is that tune about?
It's about where babies come from. It's about how people feel about the process of being alive, of being animals. You know, the British are notorious, it's a cliche really, for a sort of fear of sex. It's about that particular window, looking through two opposite windows of yourself. One of them is extremely happy to be an animal and the other one isn't. And like, do you know Don Martin, the cartoonist in Mad? You ever
oh, yeah.
see those things?
Yeah.
The guy who'd go Fadween and
yeah,
and Sthunt and things like that.
Classic stuff.
Well, you imagine just there's sort of like a long drawing of a cartoon of a room. There's a window at either end of it, and there's a little cartoon figure, like a spy versus spy person, two sort of mirror imaged people with their fedora hats and.
Yeah,
and they are the two extremes of the human personality. You know, one the happy animal, the other the sick god. And they're sort of trying to reach out. You know, that the arms extend through the windows, and they're hoping to kind of shake hands in the middle somewhere.
Yeah,
and where the hands shake, the fingers, the four fingers, discounting the thumbs, if you like, become the eight legs of the tarantula, and they become furry, and then they grow these little orange rings. And what was once a spider now becomes a hand. Have you seen The Five-Fingered Beast with Peter Lorre, the severed hand playing the piano?
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's why on the cover I drew a hand.
The hand with the tarantula.
I drew a hand, but with the tarantula's markings. So I was trying to blend the spider and the hand.
So you're saying this all has something to do with Peter Lorre, huh?
It's a song about Peter Lorre.
I hate to break it to you.
Yeah. Well, and Fear of Sex.
Who's another Hungarian, definitely. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what you were getting at earlier, Robin, the conflictedness of being human, and it seems to be that is coming through in your music, the joy of performing, the joy of being human, and at the same time, there's this kind of undertow going on that all is not well with the world, and there's a lot of stuff out there that's really undesirable. And it seems to me like you're trying to meld those kind of things in the music that you've been making lately.
Well, as you say, that's the case. I mean, I'm the last person you need to tell you that.
Yeah, right, sure.
if you don't notice that till you pop one of my records on, then you're in a special place.
He's just looking for confirmation of his rock critic theories.
That's, you know, probably one of the functions of art is to figure out, not exactly to figure out why you should keep living, but art has a sort of, it's like an air freshener or an air purifier or a recycler. It turns sometimes horrific experiences into objects of beauty. So you're crystallizing these fragments of something that's quite sordid that you might be feeding on, you know, your everyday disgusting life and thoughts, or somebody else's disgusting life that you're having to feed on, most likely. I mean, you know, it's a world of voyeurs, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that's revolting. Let's take a closer look. You know,
the rubberneckers.
When you talk about a song like New York Doll on your record, it reminds me of that because there's a sort of a tragic story there. Arthur Killer Kane died, you know, suddenly a couple of years ago. And at the same time, there's sort of a affirmation in that song, sort of a...
Well, you have to... It that does come from... I wrote that after seeing the movie. Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
I don't know. How would you describe it in a few sentences?
Well, it's the story of the bass player in the New York Dolls. And after the New York Dolls broke up in the 70s, he basically bottomed out. And was 2 inches away from being a street person, basically. And the New York Dolls reunite. He has this one moment where it all, his life comes back to him again. And then, what is it, 2 weeks later?
Yeah, he dies.
He dies.
And in between, there's some Mormon stuff.
Well, he falls through a window and finds Jesus, doesn't he? And then he spends a long period of his life as a librarian in L.A. You know, it wasn't like he was a remarkably talented guy. It wasn't like the Syd Barrett story, Icarus flies too high and winds up in the dumpster or whatever. It was more that Arthur Killer Kane did a lot of damage to himself. And that's what's so moving about the film, is that there's just this feeling of this life that was there. Not an incredible, unusual life, you know, not a life that you'd go, wow, look at that guy. Just someone who's had some good luck and some bad luck. And you really find yourself feeling for him. And then you suddenly find he's gone. And that's what really got me to write the song, was the idea that you only realize how important somebody is after they're not there anymore.
I was a New York doll. Always.
brought up Syd Barrett earlier, Robin, and I feel like it's almost like the 800-pound gorilla sitting in the room. We have to address Syd, and obviously he passed over the summer. He was a big influence on you. Obviously, you've talked about him many times. Anything surprise you about the way you may have reacted to the news of his death? Did it surprise you? Did it make you sad? I mean, how did you feel about it when you heard the news that Syd had passed?
Well, I think he passed in 1970, but his physical body disappeared this summer. So there was just a sort of tumult of, you know, just you saying about Peter being a rock critic, you know, me being a talking head on the on the Barrett topic. I mean, first I would say, just if you haven't ever heard the records, hear the records. I think they're brilliant. To me, Barrett is up there with the Beatles and Dylan. But, you know, for whatever reasons, he ceased to exist effectively about 35 years ago. He wouldn't even answer to the name Syd. He was Roger. You know, he was definitely a keystone of my career. What Woody Guthrie was to Bob Dylan, Barrett was to me. And the fact that he then suddenly, you know, the most dramatic, the most emphatic thing he did in 35 years was die. I couldn't believe he'd actually done it. What? Barrett's gone and died? That's such a commitment, you know.
Well, well if you had to point somebody to him, what piece of music would you direct people to if understand Syd Barrett?
I really like the solo records, actually, slightly more than the one he did with Pink Floyd. Let's try this one, actually, because it's only three chords. Well, we haven't played this, but it's... Dominoes, yeah. It's just it's A7 D minor and no, it's A7 G and D minor.
Okay,
hang on. I'll just take it. I'll just run it around a few times, and then it's pretty consistent.
It's an idea someday. In my tears, my dreams. Don't you want to see a proof? Life that comes of no harm. You and I and dominoes. Day goes by. You and I in play. Wasting time on dominoes. A day so dark, so warm. Life that comes of no harm. You and I and dominoes. Time goes by. Fireworks and someday, gold a shell, a stick will play. Overheard a lark today, oozing when my mind's astray. Don't you want to know if a pretty hair? Stretch out your hand, glad fields in an echo far away. Don't you want to see a proof? Life that comes of no harm. You and I and dominoes. Time goes by.
Domino, Syd Barrett. There's a tribute. Yeah, it stands. It stands.
It's an idea someday.
You're listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. We'll be back in a minute with more of our guests, Robin Hitchcock, Peter Buck, and Scott McCoy.
Life that comes of no harm. You and I, you and I, and dominoes, they go. And I in place, wasting time on dominoes. A day so dark, so warm, life that comes with no harm. You and I and dominoes, time goes by. Fireworks and heat someday. Colder shell a stick will play. Overheard a love.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. We are talking to Robin Hitchcock and two of the members of his band, the Venus Three, Peter Buck and Scott McCoy. Of course, we had to ask what Mr. Buck and McCoy are up to with REM.
You know, I've written a bunch of stuff, and the other guys have tapes of it, and they're listening to it. And I think that Mike and I are going to get together with Scott and Bill Rieflin in Seattle and knock out some stuff and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of all guitar stuff, kind of loud and fast. Trying to convince them that we don't need to spend a lifetime in the studio. I mean, that's been my problem with the process. But I think it could be a really cool situation. So, you know,
Peter. Turning around that song about the Iraq invasion was and doing it so quickly. We played it on the show two or three times. And, I mean, that was – it seemed like that's what you're talking about. You know, like how quickly did you knock that out and just suddenly
really,
it was there?
It's funny because that piece of music from Final Straw, I actually wrote it and demoed it at the very end of Automatic for the People. But I was using it as a warm-up thing for when I'm doing something that's difficult, it's really fast. So I go down and play for a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of said, gee, that's pretty good. What is it? I said, well, I don't know. It's this thing I've had around. He goes, well, why don't you tape it? So, and it was like the week before the bombs dropped, you know?
Yeah.
And for the next, like, 24 hours, I heard it drifting down the stairs over and over. It'd stop, start, stop, start. And he sang it. And he said, let's put it up on the web right now.
Can't believe where circumstances throw me, and I turn my head away. If I look, I'm not sure that I could face you. Not again. Not today. Not today.
With the IRS DVD and Best Of collection coming out, Best Of the IRS Years, is there any, you know, Bill did some stuff, Bill Berry did some stuff recently, and there's a little bit of looking back going on there, at least among fans. People were reveling in seeing all those old videos again. Any thoughts of REM looking back at that stuff?
Well, you know, it's all in our DNA. I mean, I'm sure that my children could pick up guitar and play Sitting Still.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just, you know, it's been passed down. But yeah. It's funny because Michael called me and he goes, yeah, you know, I've been listening to all the masters of the that IRS stuff. He goes, it's pretty good. I said, yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
It was a good band.
And he goes, yeah, you know, I like that kind of jangly stuff. We haven't done that recently. I said, no. We really haven't, have we? And he goes, well, if you want to do some jangly stuff, that'd be cool. I was like, you know, whatever.
And he can go back to mumbling or murmuring instead of singing.
Well,
and
you know, it's just, you know, when you do this for a long time, it's hard to think about the old stuff because it's, you know, you did it a long time ago, and that doesn't make it invalid, but, you know, you're a different person. But it's nice to go back and think about it and go, yeah, you know, we did okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I feel like that we captured what the song was about, then that's pretty much how you do it.
And then time to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes they'll carry on cooking after you've taken them out of the oven kind of thing. But mostly they are actually already set.
Yeah.
The other thing is that old songs are what resonate. So I know if people come and see us, what they're going to like most is the stuff from 20, 25 years ago because they've known it the longest.
I don't know. I'm liking Ole Tarantula just fine.
Well, that's very nuts.
Can you guys give us another one?
We can certainly try.
Rocket Ship?
Geez, what with a piano? Do you think you can play the piano on it?
I'll give it a try.
Unless I play the piano on it. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Adventure rocket ship inside a head parade. A message from the future. You crash upon a star. Attention, rocket ship. A message from the grave. You rock me like a pharaoh. I hear you in my voice. You crash upon a star. Adventure, rocket ship. Zipper me with love. I'm coming for you someday. As faithful as a mummy discovered in a crater. Hermaphrodite in style. You crash upon a star. You crash upon a star.
Have you ever played that on piano before?
No, I haven't.
That's awesome. Nuts.
Well, we got to let you guys go and soundcheck, but thank you so much, Robin and Peter and Scott, for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you for being had.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I like to hear.
You are listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. And on Sound Opinions, everyone is a critic. Not only Jim DeRogatis and myself, but our listeners as well. We hold that concept dear. Jim and I have already weighed in on the best records of 2006, and boy, did we get letters. Did we get feedback? Did we get emails?
We always do.
Phone calls.
We're big boys. We can take it. Our lists are still up on the website, soundopinions.org.
And now it's your turn. The listeners, we're going to hear from you, your favorite albums of 2006.
Let's go to our first caller, Matt. Matt emailed us with a list of his favorite albums. You had a lot of good picks, Matt, a lot of old country, Drive-By Truckers, Drams, this new band, Glossary. I especially like what you said about the Raconteurs. You made the case. Recap that for us, will you?
I said that I've never, for whatever reason, just never really got into the White Stripes, but the Raconteurs record really turned me on. And one of the strongest points for that album, which also applies to the Glossary album and the Drive-By Truckers album, is brevity. Each of those albums has 10 or 11 very good to great songs, no filler, 35, 40, 45 minutes tops.
I've got a rabbit, it likes to hop. I've got a girl and she likes to shop. The other foot looks like it won't drop. I had an
it's almost kind of silly to think about it this way, but it almost harkens back to the age of LPs when you couldn't really fit more than 45 minutes on an LP without some sound degradation or whatever.
Right. I've been having this fight with Greg for years. You know, yeah, I know there was technical limitations of an LP. You could only fit about 20, 25 minutes of music on each side. But I think that, the human attention span is sort of a certain length. There's a reason, besides advertising concerns, that sitcoms are like half an hour. You know what I mean? I mean, that's about what you take in at a good dose. And in the middle, you got to take a little break, go out and have a smoke or get a beer, make some more popcorn, and you come back for another half hour.
I'd much rather be left wanting more than have every last minute of a 74, 80-minute CD filled with stuff that I don't necessarily want to listen to.
I'm with you. I agree with that. I like your way of looking at things. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's welcome Jack to Sound Opinions. Jack, what are your thoughts on the best of 2006, man?
What my favorites are or what your opinions were?
Oh, well, so you disagree with us?
I disagreed with – actually, I liked most of the things that you had on your best of 2006 list. I thought they were really good. I loved Gnarls Barkley and the Lily Allen, and I heard the Lily Allen first time on your show.
We're doing okay so far. I get the big butt is coming, though.
The big butt for me was the Neil Young album. I just thought it was terrible. I thought it was one of the dullest records of the year.
Well, do you not like Neil Young in general?
I'm not a big Neil Young fan. I've kind of never really got what the big deal was with Neil Young. Then you played the Neil Young record, and the one you picked was Let's Impeach the President, which I think of all of the songs on that album is probably the worst song on the entire album. So it starts out and it's da 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 da, and it's like three notes repeated for the entire whatever it is.
Well, no, Neil Young is famous for being able to milk three notes for 15 minutes.
You know, that's not really milking. It's watering it down, I think. I don't know.
Oh, man.
It's so amazingly dull.
Oh, but Jack, I think we got to take you to see Neil Young live sometime.
You know what?
And I think that may change your opinion.
Part of my antipathy towards Neil Young, actually, is because I've seen him live.
Oh.
I went to see a Dave Matthews show once, and Neil Young opened for Dave Matthews.
Oh,
opening set was like 9 hours long or something. It was like the never-ending set.
But Dave Matthews plays
oh
for 47
God.
Hours.
That kept Dave Matthews off the stage. I thought he was doing you a favor.
Yeah, really.
but his opening, I mean, he was the opening act, and seriously, it must have gone on for like 2 hours or something like that.
As opposed to Leroy's violin solo.
Well, yeah, that's true.
All right, well, we'll forgive you your Dave Matthews laps and your Neil Young blind spot.
Yeah.
But thank you for listening, Jack. Thanks for your opinions.
All right.
All right, let's talk to Carl. Hey, Carl, you sent us a great email at interact@soundopinions.org, really making the case here, gave us a top 40, went into depth about what you liked about these albums. Tell us about some of your favorite recordings of 2006.
All right. I'd say, hands down, I picked the Decemberists record for number one because just start to finish, it's just a great album, and it's a real revolution for these guys, kind of.
I'm with you. I love that record, too.
Yep.
Greg even liked it. I finally made him a Decemberist fan.
That was my first Decemberist record that I really, really liked. I agree with you.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it.
Now, I liked what you wrote about your number two record, Carl, Girl Talk. Do you have it there in front of you? Or
yes, I do.
Can you read it for us?
It says, I wrote little blurbs for my top 40 and sent it, and I said, for
See,
a girl.
This is good. We're paid to do this.
Yes.
He's sitting at home writing blurbs advocating his top 40 favorite
this
albums
guy,
of the year. I like this guy.
Everyone's a critic, and Carl, you are in the embodiment of that ideal.
Thank
so you.
You
winnowed down 40 records out of how many albums you figured you bought last year?
Maybe double that, maybe more, I don't know.
Okay, this is dedication. So what did you say about Girl Talk?
I said, perfect for the no attention span generation. Also, it kicks
I love that record, too, Night Ripper, yeah. Carl. And it's basically 250 samples wedged together really inventively
oh, yeah.
by this guy, Greg Gillis, a DJ in Pittsburgh.
And obviously, you loved it for many of the same reasons I do. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, everything moves really, really quickly, but it's also like, he gets to the point where it's like, oh, you wish he would let that ride for a little bit and you could listen to it more, but then he's like, nope, no, we're going to something else right now.
I'll be on that kryptonite, straight up on that kryptonite. I'll be on that, straight up on that, I'll be on that kryptonite. I'll be on it all night, man, I'll be on it all day. Straight up, pimp, if you want me, you can find me in the air. Let me see this, let me see.
You also made the case at number four for a band that that I couldn't stand when I saw them.
Yeah, my number four pick is Man Man, Six Demon Bag, and it's a band that is heavily influenced by Zappa and Beefheart. And I know you guys went to the Pitchfork Festival, saw them there, and then ragged on them and went and said this is a bunch of hokiness and crazy insanity. And it's like you critique them the same way that, Jim, you critique Tom Waits for saying, oh, I'm just weird for the sake of being weird.
Yeah. Contrived eccentricity.
Okay, it may be a little eccentric, definitely, but I think there's really good songwriting at the heart of all their craziness.
What I say about Tom Waits doing. Jim doesn't get that either.
All right.
That's great, Carl.
It's a good diverse list. If one of us ever is out sick, maybe we can give you a buzz.
Oh.
Well, awesome. I should say if Greg's ever out sick, I'll give you a buzz.
All right, Carl, thanks.
Yeah, definitely.
Take care.
You too.
So the conversation that begins in this show often translates over into the message board, and it is a lively one over there at soundopinions.org.
We always welcome your feedback, and we're going to be including a lot more of it on the show. So email us at interact@soundopinions.org, or better yet, leave us a voicemail that we could play on the show, 1-888-859-1800. Greg, what do we have next week?
Next week, we've got a buried treasure show, Jim. A lot of people say, well, there's nothing new coming out in these doldrum months of January. And, you know, we say pshaw to all that. There are great records coming out all the time, under-the-radar records, records that maybe don't spring into the public consciousness right away, but that we feel deserve more attention.
One of our favorite kind of shows. We've got some thank yous to say on the way out, Greg. Sound Opinions is produced by our ace team of Todd Bachman, Matt Spiegel, Jason Saldana, and Robin Lynn. Mary Gaffney recorded Robin Hitchcock and the boys. We get some legal assistance from Dino Armiros. We're indebted to Jim Russell and the folks at American Public Media for bringing us nationwide. And thank you especially to Tori Southside Malatia, our executive producer, fearless leader, and the little heralded 17th member of REM.
17th member of REM.